Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
And we're in Washington, D.C. Good Thursday morning. It is January 17th, so looking forward to chatting with you today. And then I'll meet you on TV tomorrow if you so choose to tune in. You can also listen online and on the radio as well, because EWTN will be simulcasting our coverage. And I'll be out there in the field starting at about 9 o'clock tomorrow morning with Damon Owens, as I am every year. Now, the weather for tomorrow, for those of you who are traveling through Michigan, actually looks pretty nice. We are expected in D.C. mid to upper 40s and partly cloudy to mostly sunny skies. Now, if you come home on Saturday, when we get back here, we're in for, at least they're saying that now, we're in for somewhat of a snowstorm. They're saying 4 to 8 inches. But what I heard lately, the last few hours, is that it's not going to start coming in until midday. So maybe you can get home by then, hopefully. We do have a great show for you today, including our local and national hours of Catholic Connection. Again, I will be reporting from the streets tomorrow of D.C., Constitution Avenue, over by the mall. So I won't be with you here on the radio program, but we'll be, EWTN will be simulcasting it, and we'll have a special show for you. Also coming up, I just want to let you know, we're going to be having a great conversation with a wonderful priest. His name is Father Matique. He is a philosopher. He's a writer. He's a speaker. He's a former professor at Ave Maria University. He is also a bioethics expert. He's a Jesuit, and he's brilliant. And I had the opportunity to catch up with him a while ago and interview him. I was just on his show the other day talking about my book Beyond Sunday and talking about the March for Life. And see, he has done a number of different blogs. He's out there writing on a regular basis. And he wrote this really cool piece about, will Catholic doctors become rare? And that's a takeoff, of course, on Clinton's famous saying, safe, legal, and rare when it comes to abortion. Will doctors become safe, legal, and rare? Catholic doctors more specifically. But we talk about that, but then we expand the conversation regarding what the Church teaches us about what we know when it comes to the natural law. And then after that, speaking of Catholic doctors, Dr. Barbara Golder will be with me. She's with the Catholic Medical Association, and they are going to be there in force tomorrow with their white coats on and hopefully dressed warmly underneath. And they'll be chatting with me, and they'll also be marching up Constitution Avenue and making a beautiful statement. Want to wish you safe travels today, and doesn't look too bad out there. We're going to get to some clouds, maybe a little bit of some snow, but not a big deal. Yesterday, of course, it was a lot worse in the morning with all those tie-ups on 94. And here's the other good news. So those of you who aren't coming in, you know that in your area there has been, either has been or will be, some great pro-life events. Let's take a listen. My wonderful producer for Catholic Connection, Andrew Krucek, put together what we call an audio montage. Some of the sound bites of the interviews that we've done over the past few weeks leading up to the start of it all, really, the big March for Life in D.C. So take a listen.
Because, you know, everyone comes to the March for Life and the pro-life sort of eyes are upon us, it's kind of a wonderful moment to educate on what we think are the most pressing needs in building a culture of life. And so this year the theme is unique from day one. Pro-life is pro-science. We're really just emphasizing this beautiful truth that science and really faith, I guess you could say, but science and life go hand in glove. They're not sort of in opposition to each other, as sadly the other side would sometimes sort of pit it.
We had just been to the March for Life, and of course, you know, how can you not be moved when you go to the March for Life,
right?
You know? And so we thought, well, why don't we take this momentum that we've built? Because there are a lot of people from the West Coast can't go to the March for Life because that's
right.
Very far. And so we thought, well, why don't we do like a sister event, walkforlifewc.com.
The Emerald Coast Walk for Life is organized by the Emerald Coast Coalition for Life, and it's a local ministry that helps abortion-minded women. And we just didn't have one in our area, and so the board members for the ministry just decided it's time for us to organize this event and bring together like-minded people that want to bring out that pro-life message in the Pensacola area.
It's Sunday, January 20th, from 1 to 3 p.m. So we're going to have the first ever Alamo March for Life from 1 to 2 p.m., and then the 43rd Rally for Life, and it's going to be all down at the Alamo Cenotaph and commemorate all the defenders of the Alamo, including Davy Crockett and Jim Bowie and the like. So we're going to have it down at the Alamo, and none other than our own First Lady of Texas, Cecilia Abbott, will be our keynote speaker. So it's going to be an incredible event. We march from the Alamo and the Cenotaph in front of it around Travis Park and back to the Alamo.
That was Jeannie Mancini to start off our clip from the March for Life. Then we heard from Eva Montaigne from San Francisco's Walk for Life West Coast. Also, B.B. Reed from Pensacola, Florida, where they already had their beautiful event. And then coming up this weekend, you heard Patrick Von Dolan talking about the event down in San Antonio, Texas, with the San Antonio Family Association. The weather again for Washington, D.C., looking very, very nice for tomorrow. Just be safe. Take your time. And we'll see you in D.C. Right now, on a Thursday morning, let's get to the news and see what's happening in and around our world on January 17th. Well, Catholic leaders in Baltimore are laying out new plans to address sex abuse in the church. This week, Baltimore Archbishop William Laurie outlining steps that the Baltimore Archdiocese is now taking, he says, to create more accountability among local church leadership. The plan including updates to its child protection policies, a mandate requiring bishops to sign a code of conduct, and a third-party system for reporting allegations against bishops. The plans come several months after the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops did not vote as originally planned on steps to address the sex abuse crisis. Meanwhile, the names of dozens of Jesuit priests with credible histories of sex abuse are being released. The New York Times reporting most of the priests worked in well-known Catholic schools in New York City, including Xavier and Fordham Prep. The list of 50 names put out by the Jesuit order called the Society of Jesus, revealing few details and simply providing names, career histories, and date ranges for suspected abuse. Almost all of those allegations date back decades, and many of the offenders are dead. The list is the latest in a series that have been provided by dioceses across the country under investigation for failing to disclose sex abuse allegations. And we know that many people have left and still are leaving the Catholic Church, especially with the crisis, but apparently our brothers and sisters in Protestant churches and denominations are having the same problem. They're dropping out of their churches in huge numbers. A new Lifeway research survey released this week showing two-thirds of young people say they stopped going to church on a regular basis for at least a year between the ages of 18 to 22. Officials with Lifeway say that means a church had a chance to share its message but failed to stick with that particular age group. The student dropout survey interviewed more than 2,000 U.S. adults between the ages of 23 to 30 who attended a Protestant church two times or more a month for at least a year when they were in high school. Those surveyed listing a number of reasons for abandoning their faith as young adults, but nearly all listing life changes, such as moving to college, as well as work responsibilities, as one of those factors. An Israeli recovery team searching Hungary's Danube River for the remains of Holocaust victims. An Israeli official saying this week that Hungary is giving permission and assistance so victims can be buried in accordance with Jewish rite. According to Israel's Yad Vashem Holocaust Memorial Museum, nearly 600,000 Hungarian Jews were killed during the Holocaust. They say many were killed on the banks of the Danube in 1944 when the pro-Nazi Arrow Cross Party took power in that country. The search got underway earlier this week. And in the Grand Rapids area, Judge Christina Elmore making history in that city. She's been sworn in now as the first African-American female Kent County Circuit Court judge and says her election is important.
Not only for the litigants who are in court, and a lot of times you feel that a judge doesn't know where you're coming from, doesn't understand you, can't be fair to you, whether it's real or perceived, it's an actual feeling that people have.
Elmore has prior experience on the bench as a district court judge. She was elected in November and was sworn in this week by Grand Rapids Mayor Rosalind Bliss. Judge Elmore graduated from the University of Michigan, earning her law degree at Tulane Law School. New information coming out regarding that water main break in Motown in downtown Detroit that resulted in a boil water advisory, which was lifted earlier this week. The Great Lakes Water Authority, Sue McCormick, says crews did not stay on the scene of the problem Saturday night to avoid disrupting neighbors with loud construction noises and lights.
I wish they'd have stayed on site, and you know, not that the main could not have still broken and they still would have had to go through an isolation process. but it might have mitigated somewhat.
The 42-inch water main break near McDougal and Larned in Detroit caused some street flooding when it happened, also creating some embarrassment for the city due to the advisory being in effect for the opening of the media preview of the big North American International Auto Show, opening up officially this weekend. More nonstop flights are being added to the schedule at Cleveland Hopkins International Airport. Allegiant is adding flights to Charleston, South Carolina, and Norfolk, Virginia, a company spokesperson making the announcement this week.
These come about because we've really seen the demand for travel to these destinations. I also want to say that we have heard your requests, Cleveland. We listen to your requests. We listen to your input.
Airline officials say the routes will run twice a week beginning in June. Alaska Air plans to hire thousands of new workers this year. Alaska Air Group said this week it will add more than 3,000 jobs at Alaska Airlines and Horizon Air. About three-quarters will be in Washington State. The jobs include maintenance, technician, airport operators, customer service employees, cargo specialists, flight attendants, and pilots. Seattle-based Alaska Air says the openings will be posted online and most don't require previous airline experience. And Gillette is now the target of some backlash for their new commercial calling out toxic masculinity. The razor brand releasing the ad, which encourages men to hold one another accountable while questioning values of bullying, sexual harassment, and male behavior, particular types of male behavior. Reporter Gaddy Schwartz describes the public response to that ad.
Now the commercial itself is going viral, finding support on Twitter, but also criticism, some calling it condescending, patronizing, and utterly tone-deaf.
The company is saying the ad is their way, though, of acknowledging how their brand influences culture. Gillette said it expects to start a debate around male behavior with the ad and what they will donate, and they will donate $1 million per year for the next 3 years to nonprofits involved in helping men become role models. And finally, in our news segment on a Thursday morning, January 17th, Facebook is announcing some pretty big plans to invest hundreds of millions of dollars in local news around the world.
The social media giant announcing it's investing $300 million to newsrooms in the United States and internationally. They want to help the businesses create and implement business models in order to survive. The investments will help with local reporting, recruit journalists to place them in local newsrooms, research ideas of how to use technology to improve news gathering, and fund a program that is similar to the Peace Corps.
Travel safely if you're heading to Washington. If not, just travel over to AveMariaRadio.net or EWTN.com, and I'll see you on the TV. More Catholic Connection coming up on a Thursday morning. Stay tuned.
Myler & Zipka Certified Public Accountants is proud to support Ave Maria Radio programming. Myler & Zipka offer great services to WDEO listeners in Metro Detroit for all of your accounting and tax needs. Call Ken Zipka and let him know you appreciate him helping to keep Catholic Radio alive in this area. Ken can be reached at 734-930-5500. That's 734-930-5500. Or on the web at mspccpa.com.
The Wine Palace in Livonia is a proud sponsor of Ave Maria Radio. The Wine Palace is a family-owned business for over 60 years where customers come in for great service. The 9,000-square-foot store includes a humidor, specialty wine room, deli, and a rare and collectible spirits room. We have the largest selection of spirits in the state at the most competitive prices. Ask for one of the brothers, Cliff or Kelly, and thank them for their strong support of Catholic Radio. Delivery is available. Please visit the Wine Palace at I-96 in Middlebelt or at winepalace.net.
Ever notice those photos on social media of some young girls or older women striking the sexy pose? The pouty lips, the hands on the hips, leaning into the camera with a low-cut blouse. From the tween to the grandmother, girls and women are engaging viewers in seductive ways. It's the come-hither look. But do these women and girls know the messages they're communicating with these photos? I'm most surprised by the sexy poses of these young girls. The parents themselves post on Facebook with the messages of, "My baby's all grown up." Now, modesty is a controversial issue, especially when you throw God into the mix. Some people simply cannot fathom that God really cares about skin-tight pants, but God really does. In Timothy, it reads, "I desire that women should adorn themselves in respectable apparel with modesty and self-control." So the next time you strike a pose, imagine Jesus standing right in front of you. This has been a Christ Center Communication Message. I'm Vanessa Denha-Garmo, Communications Evangelist.
You're listening to the best of Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo.
Hope you're having a great day. And I'm so excited to have Jeannie Mancini back on the program and looking forward to interviewing her in person when we cover the March for Life. And Jeannie, can you believe it? I'm excited, though. This is one that I love covering it. It's so it's always this mixed bag of emotions because you know what you're marking, but at the same time, the energy, the enthusiasm, the people that show up for not only across the U.S. but around the world is phenomenal, and all the different events that go on, the youth conference and so many other things. Let's talk first of all about the theme this year, Jeannie.
Oh, I love the theme. And just a little bit of a backdrop is that because, you know, everyone comes to the March for Life and the pro-life sort of eyes are upon us, it's kind of a wonderful moment to educate on what we think are the most pressing needs in building a culture of life. And so, you know, we've done adoption in the past. In the election year, we had kind of a pro-woman theme. So we try to use this very strategically and try to discern the theme. So this year, the theme is unique from day one. Pro-life is pro-science. And, I mean, essentially, we're really just emphasizing this beautiful truth that science and really faith, I guess you could say, but science and life go hand in glove. They're not sort of in opposition to each other, as sadly the other side would sometimes sort of pit it.
No, it's just the opposite. But the problem is, and you know this better than anybody, that truth on the reality of faith in science and life in science in particular, whether it's abortion, the fallout from birth control, euthanasia, all these things, they're suppressed. All the bad stuff, the truth about what happens when we buy into the message of the culture of death is suppressed, so people don't see it as a negative, correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, yes. So advances in science and technology, all of these things we know, it supports the humanity of the child. And then this sort of the suppression that you're talking about, I think sometimes what we see is that science is not always on the side of life, so to speak, and that when that happens, there's all sorts of negative consequences. It's like virtue is its own reward. Well, you choose something that's against life, there are going to be natural and logical consequences that come with that. Yeah. So, for example, as we've, you know, had all sorts of advances in, you know, testing, for example, poor prenatal diagnosis or just to see how the baby's doing as it's developing the womb, we know that it's very sad that little ones with Down syndrome or anencephaly or any kind of serious medical diagnosis are disproportionately targeted for abortion. And so that would be, I feel like, an example of something that you were just saying there.
Yeah, and I know you have some articles on this on your website, by the way, if you want more information, marchforlife.org. So in addressing this theme, who will be your speakers at the big rally before the march begins?
Well, we've got a great lineup and a few to still be announced, which I'm really excited about. So one of my favorite speakers, I guess I shouldn't say that because they're all so, so, so good, but one that I'm just incredibly excited about, you know, hearing her story is a woman by the name of Dr. Kathy Altman, who you may or may not have heard of, but I have to tell you, she's an outstanding person. I would describe her as a gentle soul. She's an OBGYN who was at one point a medical director for Planned Parenthood, and she's down in Florida and just has a really beautiful story, Teresa, of primarily her experience of her patients, and time after time they'd come back and were having really negative consequences after having chosen abortion, and sadly she herself also chose abortion and was involved in many abortions. But after seeing this with her patients and then also seeing the experience of patients who chose life in very difficult scenarios or unexpected scenarios, she had really a profound change of heart over the whole thing. So again, sort of going back to these natural and logical consequences of the choices that we make, they bear fruit, you know, sad fruit, good fruit, bad fruit. I mean, and anyway, so that very much shaped her change of heart, and now she's a very beautiful pro-life advocate, Dr. Kathy Altman. We also have, maybe you've heard, Ben Shapiro.
Yes,
of course,
I heard.
Host
great.
Of the Ben
yeah.
Shapiro Show, and which is the top conservative podcast in the nation. And Ben is so popular with the young people, and he's such like a great logical thinker. And I had so many young people in my family, nieces and nephews, begging to get Ben Shapiro. And Ben was really interested in speaking at the March for Life, so we're so excited to have him this year. Of course, we'll have a White House presence that hasn't yet been announced, We've got Archbishop Nauman, the chair of the United States Catholic Bishop Conference Pro-Life Secretariat, speaking on behalf of the church, who, of course, has been very much the backbone of the pro-life movement, and a handful of other speakers. So I haven't announced them all, but a handful of others.
And in terms of the event, so give people, say, a landscape, Jeannie, of what this schedule, if folks haven't been there yet. I mean, I know we'll be covering it, Gavel to Gavel coverage, as always, but the rally happens. We'll be on the air. We'll be interviewing you, and many people in the pro-life movement will be joining us, and we switch back and forth between the rally and what's going on. But the rally starts at what time, actually?
Okay, so if I might back up and sort of back into that. So we begin the day before the March for Life, January 17th, with our conference and expo.
Okay.
And that is at the Marriott Renaissance Hotel, and that's from 9 to noon on January 17th, Thursday. And that's where we delve into the theme in a much deeper kind of way than we're able to do at the rally when speakers only have 2 minutes each.
Right.
David Delayden is our keynote for that, and we've got Dr. Gracie Christie, Dr. David Prentice, Rick Smith, who started a wonderful group called Hope Story. Anyways, we've got a great, great lineup for the conference. And then we have a youth rally that afternoon we're also very excited about. So check us out on our marchforlife.org or on our app to find out more about that. And then the day of the march, there's a few opening activities, and then, of course, the rally itself. So at 10 a.m. at the rally site, Ben Shapiro is going to be hosting his podcast live that day, especially geared towards young people. At 11 o'clock, we have a band, Sidewalk Prophets, that will be performing in advance of the rally. And then the rally itself, sort of the actual March for Life, begins right at noon on the National Mall at 12th Street. And then we finish as close to 1 as possible, hopefully not later than 1:15, and then begin the march from there up Constitution Ave and ultimately pass the Supreme Court. And then that night, we have our Rose Dinner at the Marriott Renaissance.
I think some people think it's only the actual march and the rally, but there's so many other events that are going on, not only, as you mentioned before, but even after. You have the Students for Life and different meetings that take place and different events. It really is a weekend of learning more about life in general.
Right. Not only that, but also, and maybe that's the most important part, but also uniting with other people and meeting other people, networking. But for so many, especially those who haven't ever come to the March for Life, I think seeing the sheer volume of people that participate and also their youthfulness, the young people and their enthusiasm is one of the most motivating and sort of like evangelizing moments of being part of the March for Life.
We're talking with Jeannie Mancini, March for Life president. They've unveiled, and this was a while ago, but if you're not familiar with it or maybe you forgot, go to marchforlife.org, their theme for 2019, the big event on Friday, January 18th, and we'll be there covering it. We'll also be there prior to that, of course, the Mass the night before at the Basilica, which is amazing. Their theme this year, unique from day one, pro-life is pro-science. And there's a great quote from Jeannie, Science is behind the pro-life movement. It is indeed. So to register to get more information in terms of you want to go to one of the events, you just go to marchforlife.org. Everything is there. I'm on the website right now. It looks great.
That's right. Well, thank you for that. And so check us out at marchforlife.org. We also have an app. We're on all of the different social media outlets. So follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Snapchat, all of those, Instagram.
Any word regarding, because we know that Women's March is supposedly, at least we still hear, taking place the next day on the 19th. Has that raised any additional security concerns? I know that security is always an issue and that you work very well with the local police and law enforcement, but anything that people should be aware of regarding that, Jeannie?
Not in so much as marchers coming. I mean, we will, just around the rally site, for people who are taking down the equipment and what have you, we will have an increased security presence, because we had a few situations with some of the women's marchers last year just trying to vandalize our equipment and being very, very rude to just our people who were taking down the stage and what have you. So we certainly do plan to have an increased security presence around the stage and equipment and things like that. But, we have, sadly, because of, sort of the situation of the world, the increased security presence at the March for Life over the last few years, people may or may not notice or realize some of the things that are being done. But we work with all of the different police jurisdictions. We work with the Capitol Police, the D.C. Police, the National Park Police. We've got sort of this, central command the day of and all sorts of plans. So we really, really have a very, very strong security and police presence.
Yeah, and my hope and prayer, given given the closeness between those two major events, is that those who are coming in for the Women's March, if they come in early, I hope they wander down peacefully and listen to some of the talks. And I also hope they see the women and men from Silent No More who are not only marching but standing there with their signs along the street that say, "I regret my abortion, I regret lost fatherhood." Because I know just speaking and working with Janet Miranda with Silent No More, and she's a co-host with me on Catholic View for Women, how many women and men, Jeannie, and you've probably heard this too, have seen those women and men on the street with their signs and have approached them privately and quietly on the side and said, "I regret my abortion too," or "I regret lost fatherhood." The witness, we can never discount the witness of those people who are speaking up.
Absolutely. We talked about the piece of the March for Life that people come to be educated, and then I mentioned sort of the uniting sort of factor where, you know, being there with other people is so motivating, and witness is really the other piece of that, and God uses all of us there in different ways. And I totally agree, Teresa, with everything you just said. Like, that's one of the single most important thing, whether it's a media interview that someone, you know, in California is watching about the March for Life, or whether it's the peaceful and joyful presence of the youthful marchers themselves, or people who have a story to share about not being involved in abortion. It's so powerful. It's so powerful. And I want to join with you in that prayer that for those who might be coming to any activities the day after that aren't related to the March for Life, that they might be able to hear the truth in their heart.
And speaking of the media, you have gotten increased coverage from the secular press over the last few years.
It's been amazing, and I've wanted to share this with you. You'd be shocked, Teresa, in December, our media firm is so good, and they've been really proactively reaching out to all of the major outlets, and we sat down and met one-on-one with, I think, every single major outlet in the last month. It was shocking, more than
wow.
any other year, and that was just to educate them on our theme and what we're doing with the March for Life. So, I mean, CNN, NBC, NBC Nightly News, other NBC outlets, with PBS, with NPR. I don't think we did ABC, but I think we've done every other major outlet. Fox. I mean, every single one. So it's pretty exciting
that I've seen
a real difference in that this year. And you know that pays off.
Yeah, exactly. And so are you optimistic that there'll be more coverage, you think? Or what do you
I am. Because you know this, that when you develop relationships with reporters, they have a very hard time not at least giving you a little bit of coverage.
Yes. Yes. Well, I'm just so excited. I love covering this, and it's my element doing live TV reporting, and hopefully you can make your way, as you always do, even though you're so swamped, over to our EWTN location to do an interview. And for more information, I really want to encourage folks to go to the website, marchforlife.org. Everything is there. And, Jeannie, I always tell people every year, but no more excuses. If you've never been to the March for Life in D.C., you simply have to go.
I can't agree more. It's really a life-changing experience.
It is.
So please, please pray and consider coming. In generosity, please come and be part of it.
And you know what? I know you can't predict the weather, but we're praying. We're praying for a repeat of last year. That was so nice.
Me too.
Well, I think we got close to 60 degrees last year, did we not? And it was
last year was nice. It was balmy, I think, as you and I said. That's
yes,
right.
Yes. So let's pray for that. Either way, it's going to be a great event. All the details can be found at marchoflife.org. And don't forget to watch us, because we're going to be covering it like nobody else. Jeannie, thanks so much. God bless you. I know it's been a busy time, and you still have, I'm sure, much to do, but look forward to seeing you.
Likewise, Teresa. Thanks so much for having me.
Stay tuned.
Welcome to an Advanced Dentistry Center family. This is Dr. Metti, and our team strives to treat you like family in a loving and compassionate way as we focus on serving you in a Christ-like manner. We do this by emphasizing prevention and general well-being for a lifetime. Our private practice is small, personal, state-of-the-art, and innovative, with the goal to educate and motivate our patients in improving their oral health. It is through a partnership with you that you will achieve the goals for your smile. Advanced Dentistry is serious about the level of care we provide, with attention to details and an exceptional level of care, skill, and judgment. We are thrilled for the opportunity to serve you.
Dr. Matthew and the team invite you to visit them at AdvancedDentistryCenter.com or call them at 248-594-9592. That's 248-594-9592. AdvancedDentistryCenter.com.
Finding a doctor who respects your faith can be hard. Consider Emmaus Health, providing primary care and mental health services for the entire family. Now, in conjunction with St. Joseph Mercy Health System, Emmaus is proud to introduce Dr. Steve Hickner, an OBGYN who is NAPRO-trained to manage infertility. Call 734-930-4020. Visit our website at emmaushealth.org or come visit us at Domino's Farms Lobby L. Faith-inspired, dignity-affirming health care. Emmaus Health.
Sacred Heart Catholic School in Dearborn is having its open house on January 27th from 12:30 to 2:30. Sacred Heart is a pre-K to 8th grade school that has been educating students for over 100 years, focusing on academic excellence, faith formation, and service inspired by the teachings of Jesus. To join them, call the school office at 313-561-9192 to register. That's 313-561-9192.
Fire on the Earth's Peter Herbeck on living for God and for the world's possessions.
Whatever they are, the things you want to possess and have in this world, we sometimes hide them from God. We don't want to bring them into our relationship with God because we're afraid he might say something we don't want to hear about those things. You can't have both. And Jesus is saying, as long as you hold on to those things, you're not going to make progress. At the end of your life, when I call you home, the story of your life will have been written. It will be all there for my Father to see. What did you want in this world? Did you really seek God? Did you love God first? If you did that, there will be a glorious story that's communicated for all eternity. But friends, if we were half in and half out, or Jesus talks about as being lukewarm, that mainly our Christianity, our Catholicism, is kind of driven by a sort of slight sense of guilt, that's all going to be revealed. And there'll be tremendous sadness. And the scripture says we will pound our chests with regret and cry out, "What was I thinking?" So that's why the Apostle Peter says, strive, friends, make every effort. For if you do this, you will never fall. Embrace it. Run after it.
Peter Herbeck spreads fire on the earth weekday mornings at 6:30 and again at 11:45 on 990 Ave Maria Radio.
What are the doctrines Catholics believe and why do we believe them? Hi, this is Peggy Stanton. Join me on Power from the Pews for more than a minute with the Catechism as I quiz the experts, top theologians, philosophers, and catechists to share the truths about our Catholic faith. That's this Saturday at 11 a.m. and Sunday at 9:30 a.m. on Ave Maria Radio and AveMariaRadio.net.
Always great to sit down and chat with Monsignor Charles Pope. He is with the Archdiocese of Washington, D.C., and he also is, of course, a big part of EWTN Radio. And he's an excellent writer and commentator. And last week I posted on my Facebook page a really good commentary that he did regarding looking back at 2018, what good could come out of 2018, and how do we move forward in the new year. Monsignor, thanks for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, good to be here.
All right, your thoughts. What I liked about the commentary was it was very down-to-earth, very practical, but at the same time, despite everything and all the bad news and, as you mentioned, the scandals which rocked us, there is things that we can learn, and in some ways what we've gone through is going to help us move forward, correct?
Yes, I certainly hope so.
All right, so give us some of those highlights that you brought out in what good could come out of 2018.
Well, I think you and I have talked about this first one before, but just the laity, I think, is finding its voice, both individually and collectively. And I think in the past, you know, we've had a tendency to be sort of fawning over the bishops and clergy, and, you know, hyper respectable. We don't want to, you know, we don't want to say anything bad. And at some level, you know, we always want to have good respect for those in authority. But we have to hold them accountable. And I think that we've had maybe a little bit of an unhealthy silence or deference. And now we need to have more of a stance of, look, this must end. And I think that's a good thing. I think it's a more healthy thing. Yes, priests are father and the bishop is the shepherd, but we're all adult children. We're not little children, you know. And we need to help respectfully our bishops and the Pope and all of our priests. We need to help them stay faithful.
And I think it's important to remember, and you point this out again in the article, that canon law says that the laity are to have their voice, correct?
Yes, indeed. You know, the canon 212, verse 212.13, 3 is, you know, according to the knowledge and competence and prestige they possess, the lay faithful have the right and even at times the duty to manifest to sacred pastors their opinion on matters. And then it goes on to say, you know, even, you know, it talks about being reverent and so on, but that there's a right and a duty to make their needs and concerns known.
Number 2 in your commentary piece is the bishops and other clergy have been humbled.
Yeah. Well, yes, and again, I hope so. There's going to be a tendency to always return to form, so to speak. But I do think that really this was a big wake-up call also for the bishops. I think it was in 2002, but they were thinking more about, we need to get our priest in line. But this is more personal for them now. I think this, we've got to get ourselves in line. And I think they're very collectively frustrated. They're going to, you know, I talked to some very good bishops, you know, off the record and so on, and who are very good and solid on this now in a way they, you know, they've grown in this a lot. And there are going to be, I think, some other bishops that just don't get it. And unfortunately, I think, you know, we know they're out there too. But I do think that overall, the bishops have said, wow. And then not only that we have handled this poorly, but that we're having a hard time even finding a way forward right now.
Mm-hmm.
These are important lessons to learn, that you can't just always handle everything institutionally. You sometimes got to get on your knees and say, Lord, help me to be a good bishop.
Yeah, absolutely. We're talking with Monsignor Pope. Terrific commentary that was posted last week. I've had it up on my Facebook page for about a week now and getting a lot of good comments. Can anything good come out of 2018? And the first one Monsignor mentioned was the laity has found its collective voice. The second point that we're talking about this morning, the bishops and other clergy have been humbled. Wanted to bring up something else you mentioned in that particular section regarding the bishops. Excellent point about them being very insulated at times,
yeah.
Which can be a real problem. And some people will say, well, how could they not know this? How could they absolutely not know? And I think if you get a sense of just how large, even if it's a small diocese, that responsibility is, and there's so many layers of responsibility, and you delegate that responsibility because you're trying to, you know, lead the diocese. And I think some people surrounding the bishops are afraid to be honest with them, quite frankly.
Yeah, you always want to, like, well, you know, it happens at the parish level. You know, the bishop comes for confirmation. Oh, bishop, we're so pleased with how things are. Just, everything's so wonderful here. And, you know, it's always this, you want to put your best foot forward. And, of course, all of the people on the bishop's staff will be saying, oh, our department's doing fine. Think of, look at all the great things we're doing. You know, everything is always, you know, wonderful all the time. You know, you've heard the old saw that a bishop says, the bishops say that when they're an ordained bishop, they'll do two things. They'll never have a bad meal again, and they'll never hear again the truth.
Well, you say here, bishops, however, have continued to be well insulated. They're often surrounded and protected by several layers of staff. Most lay people indicate they have no hope of ever getting through to the bishop. Even letters addressed to the bishop are answered by subordinates. In some larger dioceses, even priests can have difficulty meeting or speaking with their bishop.
Yeah, and I don't exactly, with all their busy schedule, I don't know how to exactly make that work. You know, bigger dioceses, smaller dioceses will be different, but how is it that a bishop can be? Now, there is supposed to be in a diocese, you have the priest council, but you're all supposed to have a council of the lay faithful. But so often, even those meetings, you know, they're all scripted, and there's going to be no big surprises in those meetings. even those are the meetings of what are called the pastoral councils of the diocese. Tend to be a little bit too scripted. Maybe that's a place to begin, to let it be a little bit more open-ended, let the lay faithful set the agenda a little bit more than just the bishop controlling that agenda.
Well, you're saying that what's being realized among the bishop is that, as you say here, many have become aware they're too distant from their people.
Yeah. And again, that's going to vary from bishop to bishop, but I'm glad to hear bishops saying and acknowledging that. And I have to say, even as a pastor, you know, in a certain sense, I'm going to be the last one to know what's going on in my parish, in the sense that that's for two reasons. People say, well, he must know. And then, only if you tell me. And then two is, well, I don't want to bother him with that, you know. And so there's a tendency that it isn't all on their side. Sometimes we sort of do that to them. And not just bishops, but really all people in authority can get very insulated. We don't handle the authority piece well in our culture.
We
both hate it, and we are also fawning in the presence of it.
The next item is clergy are more likely to correct one another and speak more honestly to their bishop. Priests are not immune from showing excessive deference to and flattery of higher-level church officials. Priests are people, and most people are hesitant to speak clearly and forthrightly to those in authority over them.
Yeah. Again, it's a related point, but as I say, I think the first line of this really should be that the priests are speaking honestly and clearly with their bishop. But once again, and, you know, there could be a little careerism in this, or just fear. You know, I don't want to lose my assignment or get the bishop angry with me. But, you know, I've been a member of the priest council for, you know, off and on, you know, for over 30 years. And I've also been on the College of Consultors and all that. And I'm kind of a little bit known to speak my mind in those meetings. You know, always respectfully, I hope. But some of my brother priests kind of look at me and say, you know, don't you think you should be more careful about it? And so, again, I said, well, I thought he had us here to know what we think.
Right.
But again, there's this tendency. We're all going to be a little fearful. But I think that this is beginning to be more, I think a lot of priests and others are stepping out and speaking more forthrightly about what they think, both to their bishops and to each other, and holding each other a little more accountable. And I think that's good and healthy. But it's going to have its pitfalls. We have to be careful that we don't just, you know, as I think, you know, be gossipy or just angry and, you know, commentary about everything, but when the bishop needs to know our thoughts on something, we ought to tell him.
Right, and you have to pick your battles. You don't go complaining about every least little thing and the important issues, and you have to know how to present them. But again, your next item goes into this. We've learned the price of silence and compromise, and this I want to spend a little bit more time on because this is so huge and I think the biggest part of the problem that we have with the abuse crisis. And if you're just joining us this morning, we're chatting with Monsignor Charles Pope from EWTN and the Archdiocese of Washington, D.C., looking at a really good commentary he did reflecting back on 2018 and the abuse crisis in the church. What can we learn? The laity has found its collective voice. The bishops and other clergy have been humbled. Clergy are more likely to correct one another and speak more honestly to their bishop. And this one, I think, is huge, Monsignor. We have learned the price of silence and compromise, especially where the sexual revolution is concerned.
Yeah, you know, I thought bishops' conference back in November, Bishop Nestau made a good point. I talked with him about this before. He traces a lot of the quietude in the church about sexual issues back to the controversy of Humani Vitae, and an awful lot of clergy just shut down because it all became so politicized in the church, and you know, politics poisons everything. And the but anyway, the whole idea of just speaking and teaching clearly on sexual matters in general has been something that our pulpits are far too silent. We have to be careful in our terminology with a mixed audience and youth present, but at the end of the day, we have to teach clearly on the matters of human sexuality. And it's all become even more politicized now, of course, in the world with the whole homosexual issue, LGBT, all the trans, all this stuff. But we just have to say, I'm sorry, my people, I love you too much to lie to you. This transgender thing is not of God. It says in the scripture, male and female,
he created
them. And I've had people get up and walk out on me when I do that. But I love you too much to lie to you. And the wolf is coming, and I can't just sit here and let people lie.
And you're going
to
be held responsible as a pastor. And the scripture is very clear.
Right. Yeah, I'll stand before the judgment seat one day. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that and the other thing about it that I point out is that, you know, this idea of, well, let's make some compromises with the world. You know, Teresa, the world's not going to be compromised. I mean, they're not going to be satisfied with any compromise
no.
we ever make other than just utterly
deny Jesus
Christ.
They want total submission. Right,
total
exactly.
submission, yeah. And this idea, well, you know, let's go along to get along, it never works. It never works. And it just gets darker and darker, and we just keep getting more quiet. And, we just have to, you know, I will say this, too. It's like anything. At first, you feel awkward talking about it if you haven't been. But everything's awkward at first. But get started. And I find that people bounce back pretty quick. You know, I often go into a parish, and I find out they haven't heard words like hell or sin in a long time. And they're a little surprised to hear me talking about it at first. Ooh, I'd have mentioned hell.
Uh-huh. Yeah. As if it's not mentioned in Scripture, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And anyway, they get used to it pretty quickly. They adjust. So to some of my brother priests, I think, you know, coraggio.
Exactly, coraggio. But here's the thing, Monsignor, that you point out, and you give some really startling statistics, and we don't hear this enough either. The sexual revolution was simmering through the early 60s, reached a boil in the last few years of the decade. Sadly, most clergy and parents remain far too silent as the body count grew. It's estimated there are more than 40 million abortions per year around the world. Most children are now raised without the benefit of a father and a mother in a stable marriage. Sexual promiscuity and the sexually transmitted diseases and the sexual confusion are rampant, yet the silence from many pulpits on these matters is deafening. In 1968, many clergy, embarrassed by the prophetic encyclical Humanae Vitae, simply stepped away from any teaching on human sexuality. It became too politicized and controversial for their taste, and sowing the wind, we have reaped the whirlwind. This is so important for what's going on right now, because the problem, I think a lot of this has to do, in addition with the failure to recognize the homosexuality in the priesthood, that's a big one, yes, but the bottom line really, Monsignor, overall is infidelity to church teaching.
Yeah, it is, and isn't that really what happened in 1968 with the Humanae Vitae? So many clergy just openly dissented, even bishops and bishops' conferences, just whole, well, it was just, it's kind of like what we've recently experienced with marriage and divorce and communion. I mean, just the outright, just, I'm not going to follow, I will not say, the Pope is just, you know, wrong in this matter of faith and morals, and all the things that happened then, you know, and now he's thought even higher to say we're struggling to get our current Holy Father to speak more clearly on, you know, from the Amoris Laetitiae controversy. So it's a struggle. We have to, but we priests just got to keep teaching plainly.
Amen. More with Monsignor Charles Pope on his beautiful commentary, What Good Could Come Out of 2018. It's posted on my Facebook page at facebook.com/Mrs. Teresa Tamia. We'll also give you an idea on where you can find it as well. We'll be right back. More with Monsignor Pope coming up.
Experience life as a Falcon. Join the Divine Child Catholic Schools community on Sunday, January 27th from 1 to 3 p.m. for their annual winter open house. For more than 60 years, Divine Child has been dedicated to instilling Catholic values and nurturing students' growth spiritually, academically, creatively, and socially. So join them and learn more about the home of the Falcons. Visit D.C. on Sunday, January 27th. For more information, visit divinechild.org. That's divinechild.org.
Today's programming on 990 WDEO is brought to you in part by a gift made from our day sponsor, Carol Love, for Better Way Design, a Fair Trade Certified Freedom Alliance company, bringing dignity, freedom, and hope to women rescued from sex trafficking. Call 734-686-7185 to find out how to be a part of a better way fight against sex trafficking.
You're listening to Ave Maria Radio.
Ave Maria Radio.
On the next Cresta in the Afternoon.
Technology informs our understanding of what it means to be human, and advances in modern technology from computers to smartphones have yielded tremendous benefits. But what's been the downside? We're going to talk with Craig Gay. Also, Randy Boyagoda joins us looking at the legacy of Father Richard John Newhouse 10 years after his death.
Cresta in the Afternoon from 4 to 6 on 990 Ave Maria Radio.
Ever thought you'd make a bundle by trading in or selling your used vehicle only to find out it's worth a dinner for two? Well, it's much more valuable to donate your vehicle to Ave Maria Radio. Thousands of Americans donate their vehicle each year. The donation to Ave Maria is easy, tax-deductible, and supports our efforts to evangelize. A year from now, will you remember that dinner or your gracious and selfless donation? Go to AveMariaRadio.net to find out more. That's AveMariaRadio.net.
Hope you're having a great day. Continuing our conversation, always interesting, enlightening, and eye-opening, Monsignor Charles Pope. Commentary that was posted last week. It's been up on my Facebook page. It's really good. I think you'll find it very encouraging, being that we are in a new year and we just came out of the retreat with the bishops in Mundelein Seminary. They're heading to Rome next month to meet with the Pope. Can anything good come out of 2018? And he goes through some items that we need to reflect upon. We talked about the laity finding its collective voice. We talked about the bishops being humbled, the clergy being humbled. We talked about clergy more likely to correct one another and speak more honestly to their bishop. And we were just talking about learning. We've learned the price of silence and compromise. The next item is some are now speaking more plainly, about the central issues of homosexuality and the abuse of power. Your thoughts on this, Monsignor?
Yeah, you know, when the crisis first broke, you know, way back in 2002, there were people who were often excoriated for mentioning the high percentage of this as being male-on-male things in the clerical sexual abuse. And they were just basically said, this is the forbidden topic. You're not talking, you know, you're not going to talk about that. And the bishops actually asked the John Jay people to even reword certain things. And, you know, it's come back, and we just have to, I think we're at a point now where people are freer to speak out and say, look, this has got to be looked into. There is a bad combination of a higher degree of homosexual clergy acting out in this way, much higher, 80% of the cases, as we know. And we've just got to speak openly and plainly and demand that that be looked into. And I will say that the Pope recently, in writing in that interview, did speak
right.
plainly to it, and I wrote an article, and I saluted him for that. Whether this is followed through by policy, well, that's another matter. We'll have to keep it up. But we just, there's so many forbidden topics in our culture. It's just the not just the language police, but the idea Nazis. I mean, they're just saying, you can't talk about that. That's just, you know, and we have to talk about it. And I think people have been, including myself, more encouraged now to speak about it. It's just, and I was at the time encouraged by Archbishop Bigandeau mentioned it, and several other priests, and I wrote on it, and some of the bishops began to speak out, and this was raised at their November meeting. And those are important breakthroughs. That has not been going on. I mean, and if it is, it's stomped on very quickly.
Yeah.
And I think at least to hear that even the bishops now raising these concerns is very, very, I think, helpful.
Why do you think they've been so reluctant to talk about it? Do you think they're concerned about pushback from the culture, which has accepted everything under the sun in terms of relationships? Or do you think that because it's so close to them, because they know that there are many priests who are living out these types of lifestyles? Is it both?
Yeah, I think it's got to be both. But I think the first immediate thing is just our culture has as the Pope mentioned, it's just sort of a fashionable thing to be gay. It's just the strangest thing, and it gets stranger every day. But this idea that somehow they're an oppressed group, you know, never mind that they're on average much more wealthy, and they seem to have quite a great deal of political influence today. They're still presented as a kind of a victim class, and I don't know with that, but then yeah, I think there's probably some skeletons in closets there that of a higher degree that a lot of priests feel the need to just stay quiet and not raise things, let somebody look into their past, and oh my, yeah, it's just the devil works very persistently.
Yeah. And next item on your reflection is we're now more aware that victims of sex abuse are not just prepubescent children and postpubescent minors, but vulnerable adults as well.
You know, the whole Me Too movement, you know, occurred in our culture just a little before this scandal re-upped, you know, and I think that's an important dimension, and I don't think sometimes when I talk to, or I've heard a few bishops talking, they get this, but I think well, let's put it this way, we all know that this idea, well, as long as they're consenting adults, well, that's too simplistic, because again, sometimes adults are not always in equal relationships, you know, you know, and so, for example, in the therapeutic community, there's been a long, you know, ethical approach that's developed that it is absolutely wrong for therapists to set up a sexual relationship with one of their clients. This is because it's not an equal relationship, and that there can even be, you know, legal actions taken. So we have to see that not all adult relationships are equal. Sometimes people are in a superior position, and they can therefore abuse people under them. And this is, I think we're more aware of this today. And it's, again, part of one of the most, you know, awful aspects of the whole sexual revolution in our culture, that it's all, sex has become a very, you know, really ugly. I'm not saying it was never around before, but it's gotten,
right.
It's just much more out there, and there has to be some pushback. And I think that's happening in our culture, that's happening in the church, and I think it's healthy, generally speaking.
Yeah, I think that the article really helps us kind of focus on some of the positives of the Romans 8:28 situations that we're seeing. All things work together for good. That despite the pain and the suffering, we're, God willing, hopefully learning from this process, as you pointed out. But there is something that's happening also that troubles me, and I've run into this a lot via emails and folks contacting me. You talk about overcorrections, and a big one is this, and it's probably the last item we have time to talk about. But I do want to mention this: a lady that is so bold as to be in incorrigible, unteachable, and disrespectful of clergy and bishops. In some cases, what we're seeing right now, I'm afraid, is a mob mentality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is always going to be a problem, that we overcorrect and suddenly our anger just boils over and we just think we can say and do and, you know, speak personally about people. And no, we have to focus our anger to the issue. We have to keep in our mind first and foremost our love for God and for the church and for one another, and just keep insisting, you know. But yeah, this does set up, and unfortunately the whole internet environment, when you're not really face to face with people, all that makes it worse.
And also, when folks are rightfully angry and hurt and they want something done, but they react to everything that's out there and believe that everything they read is absolutely true, and that can be frustrating. And they tell people, okay, take a breath,
yeah,
let's trace the source, let's see if this is accurate, because, you know, the last thing we need is bad information out there. And people don't like that always, because they want immediate action, and they want somebody to suffer for the wrongs here.
Yes, they do, and also sometimes they're looking for evidence that isn't there.
Right.
They sort of almost want it to be there. All these things, I just hope we all have such a deep hatred of sin that, you know, even if we can see some advantage in some of these things coming to light, that we just never forget that it's never a good thing that we've heard that somebody else has fallen. Right. And it's just, again, this is the anger. Anger's a hard thing to get right, isn't it, Therese? I mean,
yeah,
it's a beautiful emotion because it's about a passion for what's right, setting things right. But on the other hand, it can be very dark and ugly and unruly.
Well, you did an excellent job, Monsignor, of really outlining what we can learn from last year and to be wary of what could happen. In addition to a lady that is so bold as to be incorrigible, unteachable, and disrespectful of clergy and bishops, the next item there, as you wrap up the piece, is bishops that are so anxious for the approval of their flock that they stop leading and prophetically challenging the faithful, neglecting mercy and the pastoral need to be patient in leading people out of habitual sin. And this is an important point, forgetting that 20% of the victims of sexual abuse by clergy have been female. I really think overall, Monsignor, you've done an excellent job of helping us focus and take a deep breath and roll up our sleeves and be willing to move into 2019 to make a difference. Thank you for this.
Okay, thank you.
And always great to talk with you. When's your next piece coming out? I can't wait, because I love your writings.
Yeah, I'm trying to work on one right now, particularly for the Register, that has to do with getting back to biblical anthropology, you know, how the human person is to be seen.
Hey, there's a concept. Right?
Right.
Monsignor, thanks. Have a great week, and so appreciate your input. And, of course, you can hear him right here on EWTN Radio. His piece, Can Anything Good Come Out of 2018? We'll post it again on my Facebook page and also on the archive section of AveMariaRadio.net. We'll be right back.